Yo, fucking yo, Energy fam, what's going on? Welcome back to the next episode of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Alright guys, a few things to touch base on before we get shit up and running. First things first, as always, massive thank you. A massive thank you to all you guys that continuously show me your love and support in the duration of this whole podcast series. I've had some interesting feedback as of late, guys. Very interesting. You guys seem to be really intrigued in the more esoteric subjects, which is very pleasing for myself, because this is the information that is kind of my bread and butter, no carbs included, that really means a lot to me that you guys are interested in this. You guys were really fond of episode 35. I think it was episode 35 with Laurel Eureka. Yeah, and at the beginning of that podcast, I said that I would be releasing a future podcast that would tie in very nicely with that one. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, give that one a listen to, because this podcast right now is almost like the Twin Flame episode. So yeah, I've had some really interesting feedback, guys, and I'm loving it. So please keep it up. Drop me a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. If you're listening to this on Spotify, then just jump over onto Instagram if you can. Primal Alchemy UK. Drop me a message. Let me know what you think. Also, guys, if you're listening to this on YouTube, then please subscribe and drop me some comments. Any little bit of feedback means the world to me. It really does. And I keep sending it over and over again. But I'm doing this to make the podcast itself as enjoyable and as valuable as possible for you. In exchange of a few hours of your day, in return, I just like a little bit of feedback, you know? Just let me know. Let me know what I can do. And I will do my best to make this the best podcast in the third dimension. If it's not already, which I kind of believe it is, but you get the gig. So yeah, as always, guys, as a massive thank you, I always drop you an exclusive 10% discount code. That's going to be the code REDPILL. That's the code REDPILL that when used at checkout at primalalchemy.co.uk, you'll get 10% off anything within your shopping basket at the time of purchase. If you are brand new to the Primal Alchemy brand, and this is the first time that you've been made aware of us, then hey, check out the website, grab yourself our Vitruvian protein. That's our flagship organic whey protein superfood blend. You've got your adaptogenic, nootropic, prebiotic herbs all up in the shit, creating what I believe to be pound for pound best health supplement in the world. Scratch that, not even the world, guys, in the third fucking dimension. I source all the ingredients myself. It's the only product on the market to be certified organic, keto, and paleo approved. Made here in the UK. Free delivery for all UK customers and everyone that's listening stateside or anywhere else in the world for that matter. You also get a discounted shipping delivery option available to you. So guys, check it out. See what you think. Also, I'm coming at you with another exclusive discount code, and that's from my boy Josh and APE Nutrition. APE Nutrition create what I believe to be the best ketogenic protein bar on the market. Organic earth grown nutrients. Oh god, it's so delicious. Just thinking about it now, I was literally over Josh's house the other week, and yeah, I must have smashed about four of them in the space of 10 minutes. Guys, I'm telling you, they're so fucking good. So check out apenutrition.co.uk. Get yourself optimized as fuck. Get yourself keto powered. And just get some good, wholesome food inside of you. Use the code PRIMALAPE, PRIMALAPE, and you'll get 10% discount off anything you grab off Josh's website. So yeah, guys, enjoy. And moving on to today's episode, like I said, it is the Twin Flame episode of episode 35 of Laurel Eureka. Today's episode is with my main man, Marty Leeds. So if none of you are familiar with Marty, he's kind of a hard one to describe exactly what he is, to pinpoint. But I think the best term, which really does him justice, is that he is a truth seeker. He has an amazing YouTube channel, which always gets shut down from by YouTube all the time. So you know that he's onto some juicy shit, because YouTube don't want, or the powers that be don't want you knowing what he knows. And his YouTube channel is Marty Leeds 33. And he's fascinating. So I've reached out to him. I've been looking at getting him on for quite a while now, because I grew up listening to a lot of his work. He specializes in, he's almost like a renegade mathematician, musician, and just all-round esoteric scholar. He specializes in gematria. He's deciphered the English alphabet. And when you listen to him talk about it and being able to relate the numerical representation of the alphabet, as well as some of the more secret esoteric meanings of each word, so you're like, dude, man, it makes sense. The English language is almost very sacred. And I didn't really appreciate that until I got to really combine the two podcasts, episode 35 and this one, and really start to understand it on a much deeper level. And it's so fascinating, guys. Really, I think you're really going to enjoy this one, seeing that you guys are really into the esoteric as of late. So yeah, let's jump on into it. And afterwards, please show myself, show Marty some love. Let us know what you think. We both are massively connected with our audiences and our listeners, and any little bit of feedback would mean the world to either of us. So yeah, let's get shit started. Hope you enjoy this one, guys. Morpheus, as always, tell these fools what's up.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual, we find balance with all three as we focus on totality, the whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path, looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar as we go deep down to the molecular level. Tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use the nature to heal with a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal, and your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self-mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primer Okami.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one. Oh shit, guys. Oh sweet Hermes, we're back. Episode 39 of the Red Pill Initiation. We're back. All right, so guys, we're in deep today. We're going deep. I know I say that quite a bit, but I mean it this time. Before, I just had you in shallow waters. Now I'm dragging you into the depths of the deep end, and there's going to be some subjects that I know you guys are not going to be familiar with, but it's something that, again, very important glue to hold this puzzle that I'm trying to create in your minds together. So yeah, it's again, as always, these podcasts are very surreal for me, because the people that I'm getting to talk to and get into really sort of, yeah, commune with and share thoughts with are people that I grew up watching back when I was like 17, 18, 19, in my early days at university. Like I looked up to these people, and this is where I got a lot of my information from that allowed me to sort of, well, like, say, plant the seed, which eventually grew into the tree that's now known as Primal Alchemy. So yeah, guys, very important. Very important indeed. And yeah, today's guest, you're really going to love him. He knows his shit. And he's not afraid to say the shit he needs in order to get the truth out there. And that's what I respect. I respect fellow truth seekers. You guys know by now that I'm not in this for the fucking money or for the fame. I'm in this to give you guys truth. And what you do with that truth is up to you. I can only open the door, but you have to walk through it. So, yeah, let's get shit started and introduce today's guest. And that's going to be Mr. Marty Leeds. So, Marty, thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you. By the way, you've never looked up to me because I'm only 5 foot five. So,
well, I'm not too far off that, man. Yeah. So, Marty,
I'm like a Keebler elf, basically.
What was that?
I'm like a Keebler elf. This is where I make cookies.
So yeah, Marty, just saying, man, it's definitely great to have you on here. And yeah, I mean, for most people that are on, that are listeners of mine, you're coming at this from a different field, completely different angle than what most of the guys that are listening are going to be aware of. So I'd love for you to be able to give us a breakdown of who you are, what you're about, what is it that you actually do, and allow that to kind of like sink in and let people digest this. Because yeah, we're going deep today, guys, and the rabbit hole will be explored fully, and or as fully as we can with Marty. So yeah, Marty, go ahead, man.
Okay, who am I and what do I do? Well, MartyLeeds33.com is the website. I'm on YouTube. What is it? Marty Leeds Live. My first channel got shut down. So I'm up there. I do live streams basically every week, sometimes a couple times a week, here and there. And I basically just cover – I do lectures on a ton of different subjects. So the last few lectures I did was Freemasonry, Jesus, and the Jews, the Cult of Christianity. The one I did before that was the Kabbalah of Man. We did the Genius of the Mayan Calendar. We touched on the esoteric and the exoteric, spirit and matter. So basically what I do is I give lectures on mysticism and the occult, and that branches off to all sorts of things, like subjects like alchemy and hermeticism, and really it's all centered around trying to extract spiritual knowledge from basically all of these different subjects and topics, but especially done so through the lens of mathematics and geometry. I should even say through the lens of the seven classic liberal arts, really. The trivium and the quadrivium is really what we're looking through. But it has a really heavy focus on math, because one of the subjects that I cover pretty extensively is called gematria. And gematria is this art of assigning numbers to letters. And basically what I do is I cover a cipher that I've uncovered for the English alphabet. And so this type of work gets into all sorts of different subjects, so whether that's conspiracy theories like false flags and manipulation of history and that sort of stuff, into cosmology, it gets into comparative mythology, it gets into, ultimately the focus comes back to what the human being's relationship with all of this stuff is around them. You know, so what is mankind's relationship and ultimately to the creator, because it's a very spiritual based work. So hopefully that sums it up in a little nutshell there.
Yeah, that was solid, man. And it's, articulated very well with what the path, the quest, or the way is for the whole process of self-actualization, self-mastery, and sort of really understanding the universe and the potential of man, the potential that we all have inside of us. And that was something that I loved with you, what you were explaining at the end with the gematria and how you've deciphered the English language. And it was, I don't know if you've heard of her, she's called Laurel Orica. Have you heard of her before, Laurel?
Yes, she got a hold of me recently.
Yeah.
We were supposed to have a conversation or something. So yeah,
interesting, man. I told her that I was getting you on the podcast and that she should connect with you. So that's probably why she's done so. And I was saying, yo, I'm having Marty on the podcast soon, and he'll take what you've got and what she's got. Yours is like mathematical. Yours is like left side, left hemisphere, whereas she's coming from the right hemisphere, and she has a lot of real interesting insights on the English language in terms of the magic behind it. She comes at it from like a vibrational level. She's amazing. And I'm glad. It was interesting you brought that up, and she said that she reached out to you. You guys should definitely collaborate with something, because it's, if you two were to bring your knowledge together and find that unifying point, I think you'd have that the English language on lockdown for sure. And yeah, but back to the original point, bit of a tangent, with the Gematria, could you give us a rundown on some of the biggest sort of revelations that you sort of really sort of came across when you were going through this work?
The cipher itself is a big revelation, because just the notion that essentially this science has been lost within our language for a long time. Like, I don't really feel there's been other ciphers out there, which I don't really see being that, whenever you look at other languages and you look at how the ciphers have been constructed in other languages, especially like the Abjad and the Arabic and the Greek cipher and Isosophy, if you look at Hebrew Gematria, right, they have these foundational ciphers, like basically a predominant cipher, right? We didn't really have that for English, as far as I could see. I never saw anybody that did the sort of Gematria work that made it sort of a very legitimate work, you know, where it's like something that was quantified, not only quantifiable, but verifiable and demonstrable by everybody that was working. So a lot of times with these sort of studies, because it gets into magic, it gets into mysticism, a lot of people's imaginations can run wild, that sort of stuff. They go into it and they don't have this very scientific foundation, right, when they go into Gematria. Well, I didn't see anybody, you know, doing actually like legitimate Gematria work in English, because I didn't ever see a cipher for it, right? And so that's when I started looking into it, and I sort of had this little revelatory moment with the Septenary cipher, and basically unfolding the Septenary cipher based on this cipher, based on all sorts of stuff and symbology in our world. Like, basically the Septenary cipher, number one, is based on the number 7, which is, you know, is just such a predominant number in mysticism and mythology and religions and stuff like that. Beyond 3, it's probably the most sacred number of all, right? Maybe beyond 1, 2, but, all of the symbology in our world, the Freemasonic Square encompasses and codes it, the emblem of Israel encodes it, the Ouija board encodes it, the Holy Bible encodes it. It's based off basically a chromatic scale and a major music scale, right? You know, all of these things in our world that the Septenary cipher, just the structure of it, is based off, you know. So that really gave it legitimacy. That really gave it a credence. And that's when I started sort of focusing on, it's like, oh my God, there could very well be a foundational or predominant cipher for the English language that essentially the language itself is built off of. So that was a big revelation. Now, when I first uncovered it, I didn't know what I had. I mean, it took literally 2 years to really get my hands in and said, okay, this is something that I think it's a lost artifact of our history and a lost artifact of our English language. You know, it's been something that's been it's encoded in the Bible, you know, so it's been left for us so that someone could in the future, you know, just, you know, extract this knowledge from and decode and then see that, hey, our language is very mystical. It's very magical. I think, you know, the English language, I think, is very angelic. And so this has been, you know, so that alone is one of the big revelations, just the fact that there is even a cipher for English. You know, I think it shows that there's a lot more magic in our world and our language than we tend to recognize. And I think that's, of course, hidden for many reasons, right? Because I really think what it does is it shows that, well, number one, what it's done for me is it shows that there's a deep connection that mankind has with God. So that's a very interesting thing to hide, you know, if you're a magician or a wizard or a cultist, you know what I'm saying? So that's a pretty revelatory thing, you know?
Yeah, one of the things that I was discussing with Laurel when I had her on the podcast, and it was just like a bit of a thought experiment in what it was brought up, is that I was, just as everything is cyclical, everything, it just as we have our sort of circadian clock, and then you can sort of scale that to the earth with its seasonal clock, and then scale that to the Platonic clock, and we start looking at the areas of how our consciousness evolve and devolve. One of the things I was thinking, do you think that certain languages come to prominence and then sort of erode away due to levels of consciousness that we operate at? Do you think that we were due to a sort of evolution in consciousness, and that is when the English language began to kind of be pushed into to be the one world language?
I don't know, because I mean, Jesus, I mean, that's such a layered question, because it gets into something like, you know, is our consciousness, is this somehow the ebb and flow of our consciousness? Is this somehow controlled by the elite? Well, we know that there's an aspect of that, but then is there a level of it which is controlled by the stars? In other words, like the precession of the equinoxes, there's always been this notion that there's been ages and eons and epochs that basically, like, mankind would, you know, basically there in the vicissitudes of time, that man would get kind of dumb and then enlightened again, you know, is that connected to that as well? You know, when we talk about like conspiracies with the English language, I try to pull back from that, like saying like that the entire language itself is a conspiracy, like this, you know, like this is basically a black magic spell that has been placed and forced upon humanity. Because what I actually find with the work that I'm engaged in is that, like I said, English is actually very, very beautiful, and that you have these universal precepts and ideas, mathematical constants that are encoded within the language itself that prove that it's angelic, that prove that it's of some sort of really sacred nature, divine, you know, hallowed nature, right? And when you show that there's those sort of mathematical constants within the language, what that does is show that there is a universality to the information that is the sacred information that is encoded within the language, right? In other words, pi, things like pi are encoded in the English language, right? And the number 7, we can cover some of this stuff, but the squaring the circle, which is it's a mystical mathematical art, is encoded in the English language. The compasses and squares encoded in the English language. The geometry of the cube is encoded in the English language. The ability, or the way to actually square a number is actually encoded in how the architecture of our language. All of these things they're constants, they're mathematical constants. So they're beyond language, they're beyond culture, they're beyond race, they're beyond religion, they're beyond everything, right? And when we say that they're beyond all those things, basically beyond literally means meta, right? So we can say that those mathematical constants that have been, you know, inculcated into our language, that are shared by all of these cultures, are actually pointing to something that is meta, that is metaphysical, that is beyond. So when we talk about English language, if there's this idea that, like, you know, we're trying to place a conspiracy on and stuff like that, I think that we can actually pull back from that and say, no, the language is angelic. Now we can talk about how is that angelic language manipulated to control our consciousness. Yeah. Then we can get into a better conversation, because then we actually get into a much deeper conversation about who is in control of that language, who's controlling it, who's manipulating it, and what they're doing with it, and then why? Well, why? Because it's sacred. And what do Satanists and dark occultists and dark wizards and magicians, what do? As I always say, they take the sacred and the beautiful and the pure, and they destroy it. And so I think that's what's going on in our language. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
The conspiracy of the language, you know, that sort of notion. Our language is, words are defined, right? And they have an etymology, they have a root, they have an origin that we can see, right? And language is defined. That's how you and I can communicate, and we know that we're at least getting some information across to one another, right, in the audience, right? So language is defined. Now, it's interesting that the Black's Law Dictionary, which is basically legalese, which is what they use in courtrooms, they use the same language as English, except they apply all these other definitions onto these words that we know to mean one thing. Which means that when you walk into a courtroom, they're actually using a whole different, they're using the same language, but a whole separate dictionary to apply the definitions to those words. That, to me, is black magic. That's wizardry. That's occult, that's dark occultism. That's saying, hey, everything that you guys think you know in the conversation you're having, we're going to flip it on its head. These are the sorts of things that we can get into when we talk about the manipulation of our language, and once again, the manipulation of the sacredness of our language. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think what I was getting at as well is that the English language, it's got the potential to allow you to commune with the heavens, but also at the same time, everything comes split package. So it is, if you've got X amount of light, there's going to be X amount of darkness attached to it. And it's just the intention that's behind it. Like you can use our language to create a manifest reality, but at the same time, you can also become enslaved by it. And it's, most people are just, like, you know, we've been cleverly manipulated, programmed, conditioned into a slave state. And it's interesting that so much language that we use in today's world that's predominantly mainstream, it's just slave language. It's like subconscious programming. Every time you're saying it, you're repeating this word magic that's just working on you on a subconscious level. And little do you know, you're just further strengthening that lock of that jail cell around your mind. And it's interesting, because then again, you flip the script again and you come at it from your perspective, where you're looking at it for the magical and the sacred, which is what I'm really interested in as well. And you were saying that you can, within the English language, you've got like the Masonic set, square and compass, you've got the you can square the circle with it, and just loads of these interesting, like sort of esoteric spiritual concepts that are encoded within this, which is again deeper rooted in being a mirror image of what our divine nature essentially. And I'd love for you to be able to give us a bit of a rundown on just a bit more in detail with, like you were saying, that how the English language can be sort of encoded within the Masonic set, square and compass, and the square and a circle, man. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, one thing about what I think we talked about this before you started recording, but you know, you were mentioning something about like about you're interested in the conspiracy side, which really sort of focuses on the darkness, right? It's mm-hmm. like, oh, we're going in and trying to find out who these occultists are, who these wizards are, who these people that are the elite that should not be, who are these people in control, what are they doing, that sort of thing, which is absolutely important, of course. But then I agree, like you see, a lot of people just tend to focus all on that and they don't look above. Yeah. You know what I mean? They don't look for the light. And they do, so therefore, it's like they're looking at all the darkness and pointing out the darkness. And of course, that's necessary, of course, right? But we also can't just be looking below and looking at our feet. We also have to look above and look at the light that also may have been taken from us, you know? So that's where I focused. You know, a lot of people, I think you said this before we started this, but that a lot of, you sort of start on your spiritual path because of conspiracies. You start saying like, hey, what's going on here? What, you know, something happened. It's like, it kind of jolts you out of your reality and starts making you look more. That happens for a lot of people, but for me, I actually started in a pursuit for light, as far as like I wanted to understand more of the spiritual side. And then conspiracies came in and said, sort of dragged me down and said, look, you have to look down here too. And then you start looking down and you see how dark and deep and heinous it can go real dark, right? It can go really, really dark. And so I realized, I'm sorry, I'm not answering your question, but I'm going to talk.
That's cool, man.
I realized that if you're going to go down that dark and look down into that wickedness, you need to be able to at least balance that by looking up at the higher source and look at the light. You know what I mean? Such a necessity as far as like pursuing and going down these rabbit holes. If you don't do that, you're not going to get out of those rabbit holes. I can guarantee this. It's a dangerous course. So that said, and your question about it was on my mind. Sorry. Then your question about the square and the compasses and circling, squaring the circle is what it's known. Squaring the circle is basically this mystical mathematical art that's been known since great antiquity, as far as we know. I know the Chinese have talked about it. The Buddhists and Taoists have talked about it. The Dogon actually build their temples or their little stupas a lot like the Buddha stupa do. And they use this fundamental geometrical archetype of the circle and the square combining. Whenever you look at the center of a mandala, pretty much, you know, nearly 80-90% of the mandalas I've ever seen, the center of it is a circle and a square, right? And of course the mandala is shared in Hinduism, you know, Vedic and Hinduism and Taoism, Sikhism and all that sort of stuff, right? So you have this fundamental geometric archetypes of the circle and the square. Now, these have always been related to heaven and earth. So the circle was heaven, the earth was square. And there's particular reasons for this. You know, just a few. It's like you look at the square. Well, there's essentially four seasons on earth. There's four corners to the square. There's northeast, west, south. There's four corners of the square. Okay, that makes sense. A square is very measurable, right? Just like the earth. I can go out and I can measure that plant. I can gravitate, measure my driveway. I can measure my arm. I can, you know, that sort of thing. The square is very measurable. where the circle has an immeasurability to it based on the infinitude and transcendental nature of pi. That's a whole discussion right there. But there's reasons. There's actual, like, you know, verifiable, rational reasons why the circle and the square have been given the distinctions of heaven and earth, right? Then you have the combining of these two into, well, you have the symbology of the compasses and the square. Now, we actually can take all of these concepts into a personal, spiritual, like, understanding, right? So you're almost like a religious understanding and say, okay, what does the compass do? That makes the circle. What does the square do? That makes the square. Okay, what are those ultimately talking about? The circle or the compass or the circle points up to heaven. That's exactly what heaven is. It's a circle according to sacred geometry, right? The square points down to earth. That's the square. What those things are telling you about is that you are the conjunction of heaven and earth. You are the conjunction of as above and so below. And you're literally like, you know, just as the compasses and square are laid over one, you're the conjunction of those two, and that's exactly how you experience your reality. You've got the spiritual nature right up above you. It's everywhere. It's the spiral rituals of the heavens above that are literally right above you, the sun and the moon and the star, you know, planets and stars and all that stuff. And then you've got the earth, hard, you know, cold, firm ground beneath your feet, and that's where you are. So these fundamentals are actually expressed in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, bring this around to the language, when you actually decipher the alphabet, this compasses and square has the G in the center of it, the Freemasonic square and compasses. Well, that's actually where you stop in the cipher. You go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and you rest there. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and you rest. And so basically that symbol alone that a lot of people already have a lot of preconceived notions about what it means is actually encoding rich philosophy based on mathematical constants. I mean, the compasses and square are drafting tools, you know? Mm. So before we get all these ideas about what these people are and what they're doing and that sort of stuff, let's just look at the symbol itself and extract the ideas from it. As we'll see, that symbol of the compasses and square is encoding the mathematics of our English alphabet.
So. Yeah, and it's with the square and compass, like, I've got a bit of a background, to be fair, Marty. I didn't tell you this prior, but I was, like, initiated into Freemasonry when I was 18. And oh, nice. Yeah, sold my soul a long time ago. Joke. But I was very interested in this from a young age. So I got initiated in Freemasonry when I was 18, and I was in there for about 4 years and got to, it's a little bit different here in the UK. We haven't got the Scottish Rite, we got the Yorkshire Rite, so it's different in how when you start to progress up the ladder in terms of what you learn. But I was really interested in sacred geometry, and it's with the compass and square. You can create reality. You can, like, everything that can be created with those two tools.
And can I ask, were you unimpressed with what was going on in Masonry?
Very unimpressed.
What I get.
Yeah, there's levels to it. I mean, if you're in your craft Masonry, so you're in the first 3 degrees. Most, to be honest with you, 99.99% of those people within that, within those degrees are just completely clueless. They don't know what's going on. They're like, fuck, man. It's like you sat there, you go for your first initiation, and then afterwards you go and have dinner with the boys, and they're like, what did you think about it? And I was like, fuck, I don't really know. It's like, what the hell does it mean? And they're like, oh, you'll find out one day. It makes sense to you. And then you start doing a little bit more digging, and it turns out that they don't know themselves. And then you start to, as you start to show interest in the esoteric side of things, it's the same. Everything's so compartmentalized, and it goes deeper than Freemasonry itself. And you really, it's about being the right face with the right name, and getting into the right lodge and being in the right groups in order to get fast-tracked. Because otherwise, no one really knows. The real secrets have been, they got infiltrated a lot of way back, and
the whole thing, as far as everything that I've heard, because I'm not a member, but everything that I've heard from them, for the most part, is that it's completely watered down. It's just a wash what it's intended to be. And I've this is something I've discussed a long time. It's like, hence why I've never joined anything like that, because I see it as like, I don't think there's anything there for me. I don't think there's any, you know, that's why I always reach back when I look at this stuff. I try, one of the things I try to do on when I cover these subjects and topics, stuff like that, is I try to remove all the fluff, all the nonsense, all the perversions and distortions and shit like that. It's like, yeah, we know people have got in and done all sorts of crazy shit that people do. You know, and throughout time, of course, things get whittled away and the true meanings have lost. I try to extract all that, you know, rip it all away and get to the center and the source of things. And so I the reason I ask is because that's just what I hear from most people. It's like, I don't really get that much from it.
Yeah, and that's the sad reality, because there's obviously Freemasonry itself has such a rich history within holding these sacred sciences and being the protectors of it for a while before the Wilder Church was fucking going out of their way to destroy it, or at least suppress it anyway. And it's a shame, because the way that I see it is that if you are, well, what it really would have been like if you were a skilled initiate, then all of the information is there for you. It's there. It's everywhere. If you have the eyes to see it, to read it, and to embody it, then the information's right there for you. But in terms of using that fraternity nowadays as a group to learn from, I don't think so anymore. I think you have to. I think it's all on you. You can study Masonic philosophy, don't get me wrong. But if you, they're not going to teach you how to read it. You need to read yourself. You need to learn how to read it yourself. Once you know how to read it, then hey, you don't need to be a Mason to read Masonic literature. You don't need to be a Mason to understand the fucking secrets of the universe. It's back in the day, it would have been. Back in the day, it really would have been. But nowadays, we're operating on a different playing field here. So for me,
I'm sorry. It's interesting too, when you look back at like this, there, especially in like the UK and Europe and stuff like that. And I think it bred over to like America. But I mean, that's a whole about the history of America. Now that's been uprooted. But anyway, when you look at like the history of these organizations and things like that, but beyond that, the history of like science and how science was understood, it was in classes. Like, you know, it's like you were the Royal Society. It's like, oh, I'm a scientist because I'm smart enough, because I'm in of a class. And so therefore I'm the bright enough, and the lowly, you know, the peasant class, they can't understand the sciences. And science was really sort of held in that sort of social structure as well. Like you were, and it's even done today. It's like, oh, you lowly people, you can't understand astrophysics and things like that. You're just too dumb. We have to go to the professors. And, you know, it's like, no, science is a method of investigation that anybody can engage in. So it's just interesting, in the past, like, you know, scientific knowledge was basically held up in the elite, right? It's in class structure, you know? And so one of the things that I think Masonry actually taught, well, I think it probably infected Masonry, that sort of ideal or notion probably infected the halls of Masonry as well. But one of the things that you just said Masonry will teach you, though, is that if you just undergo the study yourself, if you self-initiate and you decide to be on that path, it's all right there for you. Like, and I agree with you, because now I can look at a tracing board and I can be like, I know what this means. That's why that has seven rungs. That's why there's these three pillars. That's why there's this grave there. That's why there's the checkerboard floor. That's why there's the 47th proposition of Euclid right there. That's why that's the seven pointed star there. That's why the all seeing eye is there. That's why there's the sun and moon there. I mean, it's just like, if you know this stuff, then it's right there for you. So that's the one thing that Masonry is so beautiful about, is that they've kept this esoteric knowledge alive, you know? In many respects, I think, once again, it's been degraded, it has been whitewashed, it's been that sort of thing, but ultimately it's still there, you know, which is cool.
It goes back to this quote that I really love from Da Vinci, where it goes, there's three types of people that exist. There's those that see when they're shown, and those that don't see. And that's what it was for. Like, they knew, like, back then, they were like, fuck, man, we're probably not going to be speaking Hebrew or Latin back in a thousand years time, or a few hundred years time. So, and the same, this whole way of thinking dates back to when the pyramids were built, when all these ancient sites were built and so on. What did they were like, fuck, they're not going to speak our language, but we need to be able to find a way to encode these universal truths, these foundational truths. And how are we going to do that? How are we going to be able to communicate? Well, it's going to be through a language that everyone's going to understand if they have some knowledge of the sacred sciences, which is going to be mathematics and geometry. That's like the language of the universe. And once you, once you initiate yourself into understanding that language, you can see the deeper meanings of everything within history, everything that's ever happened. As you know, Marty, I know that you're fucking one of the deepest for this. It's like, once you understand this language, you can, there's like, it's like reading like a, you're only reading a paragraph of history and then all of a sudden you get the full book and you're like, fuck, this is what really happened, is it? Shit. And then you get so much more information to digest and process, and it's like kind of like an alchemical sort of mixture that's been initiated in the body when you're reading the literal, but then you're also reading the symbolic, and then together that creates the full picture, and that's the unification of the polarities, the dualities, and so forth. And one of the things as well, Marty, just because you brought it up, saying squaring the circle and us being in the we're like the measuring stick, the middle ground between the two that we connect the two. You have to check it out once we're done here talking. Is go on my website and check my product out, man. It's called Vitruvian Protein, and okay. it's got the artwork on the front is the Vitruvian man, although it's like an updated one with like the woman and the male to show like that androgynous nature, its core, but it's got the squared circle, the golden ratio, and I tried to encode all of this sort of information into the product, into the artwork, into the whole philosophy behind it, so that again, it's a lot of work that's got put into it that people are just going to go over their heads, but for the initiated, they'll see it and be like, oh shit, what's this? There's some fucking deep truths getting thrown out on this fucking protein powder package. It's check it out, man. I think you really appreciate the symbolism anyway. I think you're really going to like. And moving on as well, man. So I know there are a few more things that we can discuss with the English language. Could you give us a little bit more of a breakdown of how our body is encoded within the English language using Gematria?
Yes. As you said, like this idea that you're the merging of heaven and earth, you're the merging of the spirit and the matter and stuff like that. That basically God's emanative forces have converged, have coalesced into the human body. That the human body, as you said, is like a measuring stick of the universe, a microcosm of the macrocosm, right? Now, these ideas are thrown out all the time by all sorts of New Agers and stuff like that. But if you actually take these things as serious, like scientific ideas, right, that basically as above, so below, heaven and earth, that sort of thing, as really like scientific precepts to help you understand orient yourself in reality and stuff like that, you can actually look at yourself and look at the mathematics that are placed on the human body and then look above and say, oh, the same things that are up there are down here. The same things that are right here are in our language. So this is what we talk about when we talk about there's like that sort of golden thread, if you will, that ties all of this sort of sacred information that is once again metaphysical. So your question about, okay, how does the English language relate to me? Well, number one, like you can put, when you go in the alphabet, you go basically, I'll do a quick rundown of it. You split the alphabet between A through M and N through Z, right? And what you do is A through M is 13 letters and N through Z is 13 letters. And then you walk up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to the G, which is A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then you walk back down. H, I, J, K, L, M is 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And that is one side of the alphabet. You take those numbers, you put it on the other side of the alphabet. N through Z is, you know, et cetera, right? So that is it's called a septenary cipher. So it's septen, it's seven. So, and it's all based on seven. It's the G and the T and the alphabet, and they're number seven. So if you add 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or the seventh triangular number, adding 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you get 28. Well, 28 is right on your hands. It's actually the phalanges of your hands. And these are like the most, you know, just the most prominent sort of individual. I mean, that's your hands. It's right in front of you, right? So you take your three, you know, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 phalanges of your hands, and you have 14 here and 14 here, and that's 28. So 28, or adding 1 through 7, is literally right in front of you. It's also right below you too, because the same mathematical pattern that's within the bone structure of your hands is on the bone structure of your feet. So that mathematical pattern is actually used as the numeric foundation of the English alphabet. So that, it's like, okay, well, that's cool. You mean the alphabet's on my hands? Okay, well, that's interesting. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Same melody, right? Okay, what's here is, should be above too. Let's look up into the stars. The pattern of the moon is essentially a 28-day pattern. In fact, if you take the mean or average between the two cycles of the moon, it actually will mean or average out to just about 28. So you have a sidereal lunar month, which is 27.3 days, and you have a synodic lunar month, which is 29.53 days. The mean or average between those is 28. And in fact, this is why a month is called a month, right? It's a month, it's a moon. Mm. That 28 is right here. It's right on your hands, and it's right on your feet. You know, so, and that number 28 has been used to actually map the moon. So there's a 28-day month or moon, and then 13 lunar months. So 28 times 13 is 364. So like, okay, here we have the mathematical pattern that's behind our English language. It's right on our hands. And then we look up at the moon, and the pattern of the moon that God has given us, if you will, is right here as well. So that's a scientific, mathematically based, absolutely rudimentary mathematically based, because you're adding 1 through 7. It's not like you're doing complex mathematics here, right? Very rudimentary based mathematics that we can say is in the very language we speak. It's with, and we, how we actually manipulate the material world with our hands, and then it's right above our heads, you know? And this is this golden thread I'm talking about, you know? Where is this stuff encoded? Oh, do I have it here? The Holy Bible, you know? So, and this, you know, and this is the kind of stuff, this is the kind of esoteric knowledge that's trying to be passed on, I think, in the, when we peel the layers back of the Holy Bible and see the mystical levels behind it, you know, read it in the spirit in which it was taught, right? When you look at how the parables and the allegories were taught by Jesus himself, it's saying, hey, this is layers. This is, some people are going to hear it and some people not, you know, like you just said with Da Vinci there, right? We have to read the Bible in the spirit of how it was taught. So we have to say, oh, this is layers. This is parabolic. This is allegorical. You know, this sort of information of as above, so below, in our language, on our hands, up there, it's in the Bible. I think this is some of the great mysteries that they're trying to pass on to us.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. And one of the things that, yeah, another thing I'd like to go over with you, Marty, is the relation to pi, and how much of an important number, constant, whatever you want to sort of tag it as, how important that is into understanding the connection between, yeah, the heavens and the earth and us and God, and just the totality of the importance of this, yeah, this important number. If you want to do pi and then maybe the golden ratio as well, I think those would be two cool things to kind of have a little look over.
Sure. Well, pi is basically a central number, and it's considered a transcendental and infinite number in mathematics, right? So basically it's this idea that, let's go into this a little bit. We got a little time, right?
Yeah, I'm going to lose time.
So pi is an infinite and transcendental number, and it's the relationship between the diameter and the circumference of a circle, right? So, and it gives you this infinite number, 3.1415926535892238462677. It always has to be abbreviated though, because it's such an infinite number. So you take this big ass number that has essentially has this infinite tail, and you have to cut it off at some point. You have to truncate it or abbreviate it, because otherwise you're dealing with infinity. So there's this notion that anytime you go to measure a circle and the relationship between the line in the middle and the circle, you get this infinite number. And it's irrational. It's an irrational number. There's no ratio that you can create that you can, you know, 7 over 22 or whatever it is to find this number, right? So it's irrational. There's no ratio that will give you this particular set of digits. What's interesting about pi is that you take the circle and the line, there's nothing more rational to the mind itself than a circle and a line, right? When you look at the geometry of pi, you're saying, well, I mean, look, it's just a circle. We see the circle in the sun every single day. You know, there's nothing more rational than the circle. It's right there. What's more rational than a line? I'm looking at this phone is literally sitting on a piece of wood right there, and there's a line right there. There's nothing more rational to the mind of those things. Now, you take those two geometric, you know, inchoate forms, if you will. You take the circle and the line, you put them together, and now you get this irrationality in numbers. So geometrically, it's rational. Numerically, it's irrational. And it's this perfect marriage of basically the irrational and the rational, the occidental, the oriental, the as above, so below, the spirit and the matter, right? That sort of thing. It's this perfect marriage of those things into one symbol itself, and it is a mathematical constant. Now, we go to all these other languages, and we find out that the name of God is actually, when we take the cipher for that language and decode it, we find out that the name of God is actually encoded with this number pi, right? So we look at Elohim in the original Hebrew. We find out, hey, that will actually, when you break it down, give you the numbers 31415, which is the ratio of pi. We go to Shaddai in Hebrew. Shaddai, which is, I think it's Almighty, I think is what it means, or Lord, Almighty Lord, I think is what it means. Shaddai actually equals 314, right? We go to Greek, Jesus, Lord Jesus Christ in Greek, which is Iesus, Iesus, what am I saying? I've totally lost myself. It's Lord Jesus Christ in Greek. Why can I not think of what that is right now? Anyway, Lord Jesus Christ in Greek. You do the numbers to it, right? And use the cipher for the Greek language that's been known by many linguists throughout time and theologians and mystics and stuff like that. And you find out all you have to do is read it backwards and it's giving you the digits of pi. Right. So here you have all these names of God. It happens in with Lord and God in English as well. And I actually have several videos in covering this stuff. Right. It's encoded between the words holy and Bible. Pi is right. So you find this mathematical constant that anyone at any point in history, any time in history, doesn't matter the language, doesn't, as we talked about, doesn't matter the race, doesn't matter the epoch of time, the language, the culture, whatever it is, you can find this constant. Right. Then this constant is actually given to the names of God, which is what, once again, metaphysical, right? Now we go into the English language, and remember we talked about, we went A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and we stopped at that G, right? And then what's in the center of, here, hold on. Sorry. You know, what's in the center of the Freemasonic square and compasses is the G. Well, that's where the number seven rests. Sorry. The number seven rests. Seven using the English cipher, S-E-V-E-N, equals 22. So the word seven equals 22. 22 divided by seven is pi. So here you have the cipher based on a mathematical constant that you find on your hands. You find it in the language, find it on your hands, you find it up there. Then we look at the actual number it's based on, and we find that within that word is encoded a mathematical constant that points to God.
Right.
What's interesting is that you have two pi's in the language, right? So we said that we have G, that's pi, that's seven, and then you have T, that's seven, right? Well, that's two pi's. Well, what's interesting, so you have pi on G and pi on T, right? What's interesting is that's two pi, which would be 6.28. Well, the mathematical constant tau, which is the letter literally called tau and is literally abbreviated by the letter T, is 6.28. Well, that means our alphabet is encoding not only pi, but tau, which is pi and tau, of course, they're constants in trigonometry. So it's like any mathematician that is worth its salt could clearly see, you know, that any professor, anybody that's been a study math at all, I mean, my brother studied math, he sees it, you know, anybody could see that that's clearly encoded within our alphabet. Now, how many professors or academics or intelligentsia or professorial elite people are ever going to look at this and give it credence or credibility? Not much. Right. Why? Because it breaks the boundaries, right? It brings in, oh, wait, no, what you're telling me that Christianity and Judaism and all these religions have to do with mathematics and these things are encoded in our languages? It's like, no, we have to separate these things. We have to compartmentalize these things. We have, you know, so that's really what this work sort of does. It sort of breaks those barriers, you know?
Yeah, one of the interesting things as well, I might butcher this horribly in the way that I break this down now, I might not be the best to articulate it, but it was like well back in the early days when memes were just kicking off, and I seen one of these memes about pi, and it was basically describing, because of its infinite nature, that if you were to encode pi into a bitmap or to generate a image on a computer screen, that you would be, because of its infinite nature, and if you attributed each sort of numerical value to a color or a pixel, then you would be able to recreate everything that you see from the moment you're born to the moment you die and everything in between from that number itself. And I was like, fuck. Yeah, I was like, shit. Man, that's pretty deep. I was like,
yeah, even if that's not true, that's a wonderful intellectual exercise to do upon thinking about God.
Yeah.
You know, like when we, the parallel of like, oh, this is what pi can do. Even if that's not true, it's like if we're making the parallels, know that he can, you know, if you will.
Fuck, man. Yeah. This is what I mean by this stuff. It's like once you start to open yourself to this, it has a magnetic pull to it. And it's one of those that if you just allow your mind to be open to the possibility, just to begin to look into this, very quickly, you're fucking months in and you're like, shit, where did that time go? And you're just balls deep in studying this stuff, because there is some sort of magical magnetism to it, in that, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's that there's that inner thing inside of you, that inner source that is on the other end of that magnet, and it's just pulling it in. It's making you kind of learn more about yourself, because that's what you're doing when you're learning about these mathematical equations, these mathematical constants, this whole philosophy. What you're really doing is learning about your true origin and source. And I think there's something inside all of us that yearns for that.
Yeah, to go off that, like literally everything you just said is there's a mathematical correlate there, right? You said the origin, everybody's trying to get to the origin. There's a magnetic pull that's something within yourself. That's the seventh point. This is what we've covered. Like the three-dimensional mathematics of you, if you just take you in the simple dimensional way, like you're a three-dimensional being, right? So it's forward and reverse, up, down, left, and right. So that's six directions around a center point, an origin point. That origin point, even in three-dimensional mathematics, is the seventh point. It's either the zero point or the seventh point, if you will. So this whole notion of God doing his work in 6 days and resting on the seventh is, once again, a correlate to, you know, the genesis of all creation is the genesis of your creation. So when you talk about there's something inside you, an origin inside you that's pulling, you know, it's magnetic. It's like, no shit. Like, yeah. You know, like seriously, you can actually boil it down to its most simple form, and that would be literally 1 through 7, you know?
And what were some of your thoughts on, again, this is a subject that can just go off on many tangents, about the golden ratio?
Oh, thoughts. I thought you said faults. I was like, what are my faults? A lot throughout the year. But thoughts on the golden ratio. Yes. This is another one of these design, this things like pi, phi, e, even just basic geometry, like the pentagram or the hexagon or the hexagram or, you know, that sort of stuff. These are all design elements or signatures of the designer, right? The great artificer, the grand architect, God, that which has no name, right? These are all design elements of it. So you can actually look through creation, see the design, see that there is a design pattern behind it, like as if there's literally a mathematical matrix that's literally behind the material plane. Even material, mater, which comes from the word mother, Mother Earth, is mater. And mat, M-A-T, is the root of that word, which is, you know, once you throw an H at the end, you got math, right? Mm-hmm. It's the matrix, the material plane, that there's a mathematical matrix behind the thing. And that you as a human being have been given the higher consciousness to actually extract the math from it and learn from it and actually see it and calculate it, right? One of those design signatures or elements are, as a lot of people know, phi, the golden ratio, the golden mean, the golden spiral, right? 1.618. To, you know, 1 to 1.6 or 1 to 1.618 or 1 to 0.618 is the ratio. This ratio is found in the pentagram, it's found in the perfect pentagram. So, and this is how, you know, when you look at a snail, this is how it grows. The ratio of a bee is how it grows. You see this ratio on your body, like from basically the tip of your head to roughly around your navel and your navel to the bottom of your feet. This is in proportion of the golden ratio. The cochlea of your ear is the proportion of the golden ratio. This is a design element that literally the grand artificer, God, just like right across creation and said, this will be the mean or average upon which everything grows. That's why it's called a golden mean. Mean is an average point, you know. So this whole ratio is found in the perfect pentagram, which is what? The number five. Well, where did the grand intelligence put the number five? Right here, you know. And then you say, well, your hand is actually built off that ratio too, you know. So this is all this, once again, this metaphysicality, if you will, that's embedded within the study of numbers, that is literally plastered all over the temple of the human being, you know. And it's like, man, know thyself and you shall know the universe and the gods is the Delphic Oracle, right? Well, it's like, no shit. You know, you understand yourself, you're going to understand where you came from. You know, when we talk about the origin point, the design of the human body, how you're related to the heavens above, how you're related to the English language, how all of that stuff is related to God, you know? So that's what I see the golden mean as. It's a design element or design signature of God.
Yeah. And that's you just briefly covered it then to saying that you are temple. And that's one of the points that I continuously make, in that the body is a biological temple, a bioelectrical temple, in that the craftsmen, the builders, the architects of the ancient world, they created these temples to be the macro man. Like, that's what they created it to be, to be a mirror image of man himself, or man in his androgynous nature, the dimensions of man, which also then has a scalar representation with the skies above. So it's as above, so below. So you'd be able to mirror the heavens down on earth. And that's why when you walk into these Gothic cathedrals, into these temples, into these pyramids, wherever you're going to be in the world, whatever, every civilization has their ancient builders somewhere in their history. And when you walk into these places, it works on a vibrational level. There's something that happens that interferes with your own internal vibration when you're walking in, especially if you're sensitive to these energies as well. You walk in and it interacts with your state of consciousness. And that's the exact same science that's embedded within the human body. That's what I mean. We are capable of accessing these older states of consciousness because our body is encoded to do so. It's like the mathematics of the body allows us to operate on the celestial, terrestrial, whatever level that you wish to operate at. And it's that's why it's very important for me. And I don't know if you've heard of the research of Dr. Kate Shanahan, and I forgot his second name, but it's called the Marquardt mask. And essentially, but this is where it kind of relates into the sort of shit that I'm into, which is more of the health side of things, especially with nutrition and ancestral nutrition, in that there's certain diets that within when you're given certain nutrients, and it's the nutrients that your cells are needed and to be built and operate correctly and for your body to grow, that you grow into the golden ratio more precisely than if you were to eat let's say a standardized American diet. There's foods that you eat they show that people that were raised on this diet compared to people that wasn't, that were raised on this standard Americanized diet, you can see in their bone structure, in their asymmetrical sort of blueprint of their body, how their body has grown. And these people it changes the structure of your skull. So you've got more space for brain tissue development. It changes the structure of your body. So you're more physiologically adapt and adept for physical conditioning. There's so much interesting shit that when your body is given what it needs and you follow natural law, you are spiritual in nature, then we tend to, as everything does, as a sunflower blossoms into with its perfect sort of spiral within its within its foundational architecture of geometry, so do we. And it's very interesting, like you said, that is the golden average. It's just like God was lazy and was just like, fuck it, man, let's put this program in and let everything grow to that. I can't be fucked to do everything individual, too much work. And yeah, so fascinating, Marty. So you know, I want to try and get into some deeper shit with you. And I want this to kind of be I want you just to what are you looking into at the moment? Like what's your sort of fascination? What's the main thing? And then we can just go off that.
Okay, well, that's impossible to say, because I basically at any one time I have like five to six lectures that I'm working on. So right now I'm working on a bunch, like one on, and I don't know when they go up, but working on like Norse mythology, and then working on, oh my God, what are the other ones? We've got like five or six going. The Freemasonry in space. What's the one? One on faith. I'm going to talk about the golden ratio and the golden mean and the Holy 108 and the Merkaba. So that's one that's coming up. So it's like at any one time, I'm, you know, one of the other ones we're working on is the role that the Royal Society has played within the manipulation of history and science and things like that. So, I mean, there's a number of things that we could talk about or leapfrog off, but do you deal in psychedelics at all or anything?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can go pretty deep into psychedelics, man. Yeah, if you want to hit that one off, and I'm happy to take that down whatever route you decide to flow down with it.
Can I tell you a story?
Go for it, man. Yeah.
Okay, so I was working in the lawn just the other day, and I was thinking back to when I was probably, I don't know, I was probably like 20, maybe 21 or something like that, and I had taken some mushrooms at my old hometown in Monroe, Wisconsin, at my friend Catherine's place, and I ended up, it was pretty late, and I was like walking the streets, right, and I was 20 at the time. I'd begun, you know, I'd been a reader for several years, but you know, I didn't know anything about the mysteries. I didn't know anything about geometry. I knew nothing about mathematics. I knew nothing about, you know, Freemasonry or fraternal orders or occultism. I mean, I literally knew nothing. I was basically just sort of diving into the world of, you know, that sort of thing. So I was on mushrooms and I'm walking down the street and something hit me and it would not leave my head, right? And it was, I was looking at the houses and I was noticing that every house was a square on the bottom and there was a triangle at the top and that was the roof. Right? So it was like a triangle at the top and a square at the bottom. And for some reason, like, you know, you're just in that sort of state where you're just sort of receiving things. This sort of hit me and I was just so, you know, I was just like astonished by it. For some reason, it was just so profound that there was a square and a triangle, right? Years later, it's like, that, of course, I got done with the trip. And it's like, what, that doesn't mean anything, whatever. You know, I was just thinking about that. So years later, then I get to the point where I start dealing with this idea of the merging of three and four, right? And, you know, if you look at occultism, a lot of times they'll tell you the triangle is three and the square is four. And so this is the merging of literally this is the quadrivium being four and the trivium, right? This is the merging of four and three being seven. So it was years later that this really profound moment in a trip that I literally had no idea what it meant. All of a sudden it was like that. It was like, damn, okay, that's why I was looking at that. That's why my subconscious was like, look, focus on it. Look at this. Make it, you know, put it in your head. So it was just one of those interesting things that, like, I wasn't even on the path to this at all. I guess I was, but not consciously on the path to this, but subconsciously I was. And then I also think, then made me think about how many people have those moments in their life that would actually point them and get them on a path like this, but they just don't have the information, that it just hasn't been presented to them, or they, you know, these sort of ideas have been squelched and squashed and hidden and obfuscated and stuff like that. So anyway, it was, I don't know, I just kind of wanted to share that because it was like one of those moments where you have this psychedelic thing and it's like something's really profound, and yet then you get done with the trip or something and you're like, oh, it was whatever. I just was at one of those fleety moments and flighty moments in a trip. It's like, no, actually not. You were being handed, like, you know, something foundational here.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just kind of wanted to share that.
Well, that links back to what we were saying earlier, is in that there are those that see when they're shown and those that don't see. And that then you didn't see. But if you would have, if you would have had this knowledge that you've got now back then, it would have made sense. So again, that's the everything is hidden in plain sight. Just I had Scott Onstott on, and yeah, I love that saying, the secret's hidden in plain sight. And that's how, I mean, this is how that information of the higher orders, that's how it's delivered to you. It's delivered to you in ways that the way that we're taught in school, you're not gonna understand it if you're coming at it from that perspective. If you're looking at this knowledge through that lens, you're gonna be blind. Whereas when you have this understanding of the higher sciences, the classical sciences, then yeah, you begin you now know, you're like, oh, there it was, hidden in plain sight. And
so much of it is like, it's like sort of meditation and contemplation. You know, it's very contemplative. It's not necessarily reading out things all the time. That is an important part too, but it's also this notion of just thinking deeply upon things, even simple things like we talked about. Let's look at just the elementary properties of a square. You know, let's think deeply on these. What, you know, and you know, then you start doing that, and you realize it's like, this is a wellspring of knowledge. It's a wellspring of wisdom that is encoded within these geometric archetypes. And they're, once again, they're metaphysical. They have a stasis. They're beyond the physical. They have a place where they're untouchable. They're incorruptible, like gold, right? Think about this. Philosophical gold. Gold has always been related to light, right? And gold is incorruptible, just like the geometry. It's incorruptible, right? Those are the places that we can go to get the higher wisdom. Higher wisdom, what's another thing that's incorruptible? The stars. The star patterns are untouchable by man. They're always going to be there, and they have been there for centuries. So when we go and we want to extract knowledge and things like that, it's like, God, we got this metaphysicality right above us. We got these incorruptible things right within our language, you know? These are the places that we can go to find that philosophical and spiritual gold. You know,
yeah, I think it was Nietzsche that said that as long as you look up to the stars as something above you, then you won't understand, you won't have knowledge, in that the stars are encoded within us. And it can take you down many paths with this one. And one of the things that I would, Have you got any more sort of psychedelic stories? Anything else that you've got to share? Any sort of revelations like that, where you've got like the deeper truths that were kind of just went over your head at the time?
You know, I don't know if I have any off. I mean, there's one I've told before, but I've told that one before. But it was, you know, there's been like dreams and stuff like that that I've had that have sort of jolted me, that, you know, beyond psychedelics, you know, just basically dreams. Like I remember one. And these are the sorts of things that, like the messages in the subconscious that try to wake you up and get you on these paths to try to understand what it is you're seeing, what's being handed to you in the subconscious, right? So you ever have a dream where you're falling and, you know, right before you land, you wake up? Have you ever had a dream like that? Have you ever had a flying dream? Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, it's a pretty common thing that a lot of people will have a dream that there's like, next thing you know, you're flying. You really feel like you're flying. And then all of a sudden, sometimes you'll like come down and like, oh, right before you land, I'm going to crash. And then you'll wake up, you know, it'll startle you and wake you up. Well, I had a dream where I was falling from the sky. And I was falling. And next thing you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to hit the ground. I'm going to die. But I was conscious enough in the dream that I was like, before I hit the ground, I was going to wake up, right? Oh, sorry. Is that loud?
No, it's all right, man. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was falling in this dream, right? And I thought that right before I'd hit the ground, I would wake up, right? Well, I didn't. In the dream, I actually fell, and I fell into this grave, right? And it was like, you know, 6 feet deep. And then I woke up, and then I was like, for a moment in the dream, I was like, why am I not awake? Then I woke up. And then I look at the clock, and it was 4:32. It was one of these moments that it was like, you're fallen from the heavens. You're a being that's fallen from the heavens. Your whole process is to go through a death and rebirth process. That's why I was in the grave, and I woke up in the grave. And then I woke up to the number 432. I mean, it's unbelievable. It was this moment, like, I should have woke up before I was in the grave and all that sort of stuff. And so this whole process of death and rebirth, well, you multiply through the name of Jesus. 432 is a number that's steeped within, if you guys don't know this, it's all over esoterica. It's in, you know, the Hindu cycles. It's in all these sorts of things, right? But 432 is actually found in the name of Jesus, right? So if you multiply through the numbers of Jesus in the septenary cipher, it's 4,320, which is just a derivation of 432, you know? So it was a moment like that where it was like, if I hadn't undergone all this study and couldn't, you know, extract these sort of philosophical or spiritual ideas from it, these premises from it, that would have just been another crazy dream and I would have just kept walking out of my life. But here it was like, no, you know, here's some, pay attention kind of thing, you know? So anyway, that's not necessarily
I think things like this, I think it happens to people all the time. I think it, you can get these messages given to you in the dream world. I think you get messages given to this in the real world, or defined as the real world anyway.
Give me 1 second. I'm going to shut this off.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'll keep talking to everyone. So yeah, guys, the 432 is actually a very interesting number. Marty briefly touched on it then, but something that just for you to think about, which is really interesting, is that if you take the baseline perimeter of the Great Pyramid and you multiply it by 43,200, then you get the equatorial circumference of the planet. And then if you take the polar radius, if you take the height of the Great Pyramid and times it by 43,200, then you get the polar radius of the Earth. And there's all of these cool little relationships between the number 432. If you listen to music tuned to 432, it has like a it alters your state of consciousness. It's much more soothing, much more relaxing than music that's tuned to 440, which is another conspiracy in amongst itself. But Marty's back anyway. Marty, I was just briefly going over the some of the interesting
Some simple ones, because, you know, like there's ones that are very verifiable, right? So it's like ones you don't have to worry about trying to measure some, you know, the circumference of the Earth or something like that, because people even question about, you know, what the Earth is and all of that. But there's simple ones that you can point to 432 to show that the once again, that these are canonical numbers within sacred geometry. One of them is time, right? So the diurnal cycle of the sun, as we experience it, is in a sexagesimal system, is a sexagesimal meaning base 60. That's how we map time, right? So the one diurnal cycle of the sun is 86,400 seconds. So 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 24 hours in a day being 86,400 seconds. So that's your base number, right? It's basically the smallest measurement that we even measure because it's the second. Mm-hmm. Half of that day would be 43,200. So once again, a variation of 432. So that's where 432 is like literally that's half a day. So that's once again why we find the numbers like that of importance. Two cubes would be 4,320 degrees. So the pair of dice is 4,320 degrees because each die is 2,160 degrees. Once again, there's another 432. One more. Once again, these are all verifiable. You look at the degree of phylotaxis, which is the degree in which, you know, leaves will arrange themselves around a plant, around the central stalk of a plant, to receive the most amount of like light and rain and all that sort of shit, right? That fundamental degree is 137.5 degrees, 137.5. You multiply, which is basically it's a mathematical constant. So you take that mathematical constant, you multiply it by pi, so 137.5 times another mathematical constant being pi, you get 432. So these are numbers that why they're so sacred. They're literally embedded in our experiential reality, you know, and they're central to it. So yeah. That's why they picked this stuff out. You know, they picked this stuff out and said, oh, okay. You know,
there's so much of it everywhere. It's again, if that 432, then you can have 216 or 864, all of these, they have their relationships with the Platonic solids, which obviously play a massive part within so many different systems, depending on what sort of lens you're looking at them through. You can look at it in terms of the relationship between the Earth, Moon, and Sun. All of these numbers are integral within the structure of the universe itself and the very fabric that the universe seems to be woven with. And I was going to make the point earlier, Marty, and it really, as I was just thinking about when you were saying, and I feel like this is what I feel like these, these messages are always there for people, but I feel like back in ancient times, even up to a few hundred years ago, I feel like people were much more naturally inclined to have those times of contemplation where they would sit there and be like, just look up to the stars and be like, what's going on here? There's more to this than meets the eye. And then nowadays we've got such a... What was that?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, sorry, man. Yeah, and then literally today we've got such a shortened attention span, and that's a lot to do with technological intervention, but also just with all the shit that's we're just being bombarded with, and that's on through the food we eat with the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, excitotoxic chemicals in our foods that are just putting us into a state of fight or flight all the time. The water we drink, the air we breathe, the electromagnetic radiation, there's so much shit that's just whoosh, 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 just coming in at us from every angle, and it's just stopping us from being able to take a moment, center yourself, and just be like, what's this about? Why am I here? Some of the deeper questions, some of the questions that back in the day when our ancient ancestors were in God mode and roaming the earth, they had the time and to be able to think about these questions. And it's interesting that we kind of just shit all over it now. We don't give a fuck on, we don't value the thoughts and opinions of our ancient ancestors. We look at them as primitive. We look at ourselves as superior because we've got the atomic bomb and the fucking like toothpaste for our electric toothbrush. We think that we're so advanced, and it's but looking back, you can see that we've really degraded. That's how it really does feel when you come at it from this perspective of these sort of sacred sciences. We've really degraded and deteriorated in terms of knowing more about ourselves than and the world than, well, what we do now.
Yeah, you know, it's a point I brought up in one of the last lectures. It's this notion that it's like when we look at ourselves and we look at our society, we're under attack, right? I mean, medicine causes, you know, makes you sick. Food is poison. The air is being poisoned. And we're also being taught with scientism and the cosmology and things like that, that we're insignificant, you know, that we're not special. And if all of these sort of elite that are doing this stuff to enslave us and all that sort of stuff, if that's the notion and that's the message that they're perpetuating and purveying onto humanity, they're saying, you're not special. And not only that, we're literally going to enslave you and poison you and stuff like that. They have to go through this campaign that's so pervasive and so orchestrated and so organized, right? Just to keep this thing going. Well, that tells me that if they're telling us that we're not very special and they're going to such great lengths to do so, that tells me that we are very special. Mm-hmm. That means that they wouldn't go to such great lengths if we weren't, in a sense, living and walking, talking gods, if we weren't expressions of divinity. And that's like exactly what I think we are, in a sense that the whole entire world, in a sense, is a theophany. It's a visible manifestation of God, right? In a sense, right? I think that's what we are. I think that's what the holy books and things like that have told us. And that's why there's such this orchestrated work to try to, you know, bury us and enslave us and put us down and kick our, you know, faces in the mud and stuff like that, you know? And so, I don't know. I think, you know, that's just, I think, sort of what's going on. And, you know, the sacred sciences and things like that sort of revivify and revitalize this notion that, like, no, you're born from a great authority, and that authority is, you know, God itself. You're born from the divine. You're born from that sort of place, which means that you are special. You're here for a special purpose, and you're significant, you know? As far as, like, modern humanity, when we're inundated by all this stuff, cell phones and internet and 5G and chemtrails and all this other shit, right? Back in the day, people weren't inundated by this stuff, and they were also not distracted, right? So if you know, like, even in the 1800s or whatever, it's like there was no light pollution. You wanted to go out and look at the stars, they were out every single night, right? I live in Hawaii, and I live, you know, I don't have, there's no like lights in the streets or anything like that. So it's pretty dark here, but mm-hmm. even here, like you don't see the sky as much as if I go down like 20 miles, 25 miles down to Pune, where there's basically nothing there, right? The stars are unfucking believable. They're okay. unbelievable. We used to live down there. You walk down the street, you saw the Milky Way galaxy every single night. I could see Sagittarius. I could see Scorpio. I could see the, you know, Orion, all this other stuff. It was all right there. It was like the majesty and the mystery was there for everybody's eyes to see. And even light pollution is, you know, it's veiled that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think people in the past did have a greater connection because they weren't inundated by all this stuff. And they had, you know, because it was right there. You didn't, you know, you weren't spending 10 hours on Netflix. You know, if you wanted something to do, you were going to read a book or you were going to pick up the piano. You know, you're going to, you know, pick up playing the piano or something, you know. So there's a reason for the reason that all this stuff is presented to us. Netflix and video games and movies and TV and all this sort of programming is so that we will not keep focused on what we should. And what is that focus? That's the origin.
Yeah, it's not even so much in terms of just the attention, in terms of getting our attention. It's the programming that goes into what happens once they've got our attention. And it's the same as like the old fucking mate, that old school film They Live, like when he puts those glasses on and he looks into the papers, he looks over all of the billboards and it's like obey, like conform, obey authority, just all of this stuff is that's what's happening to us. And there's so many levels at which we're being having our sovereignty of our consciousness just abused and like stripped from us. And yeah, so we're getting it from every level.
Turn it off. You know, it's like, I mean, you know, Jennifer and I, for the most part, we've completely boycotted Hollywood. We don't watch TV. I don't have a Netflix account. The only reason I'm on any of this is so I can teach and lecture and have conversations like this. You know, I don't, you know, it's like all of that. I basically turned it off. We're trying to get back to simplicity, you know, frugality, you know, that sort of thing, just because I don't know, it just helps us, you know, there's life is so much less complicated in that sort of sense. You know what I mean? You just get back to the nitty gritty and yeah. You don't have to listen to this programming and bullshit all the time, you know? So, I mean, that's my advice. I don't like to give out advice. I like people to decide what they want to do themselves, but I, you know, that's what I do is turn the shit off, you know?
Yeah.
You can't turn off 5G. You can't turn off the chemtrails. There's only so much you can do, but you know.
Yeah, it's. I think it's needed as well, just to recalibrate. Again, it's like some people are more fortunate than others in that they are in positions where they can do so, and then some work hard in order to be able to get themselves into those situations where they have the freedom to be able to liberate themselves, to be able to live that sort of life. And it's when you live that sort of life that I believe that you really begin to connect with yourself and with nature, because you're living in accordance to natural law. You're not being influenced by external factors that aren't of your local environment. And there's so much benefit to come from that in terms of your physical health, your mental health, and I believe your spiritual health as well. So I'm sure you've seen experienced quite the difference since going for, how long have you been in Hawaii for now?
Since April. So
where did you live before?
In Oregon. So, and I was just thinking about this morning. We lived in Eugene. And we basically left because we essentially had to leave, because it was, I mean, didn't have to, but it was bad, you know, like there was, you know, fires all over Oregon, which a lot of people say that these, this energy directed weapons or that these are caused by whatever, you know, either way, it's fucking smoky as hell there. And we were in a valley. And so not only that, I mean, the skies, I tell you, man, the skies were nightmarish as far as chemtrails were concerned.
The apocalypse.
Absolutely. That's the precise language right there. That's what it felt like. You walked, and I was an avid hiker. You know, I used to do 12, 20 mile hikes every weekend in Oregon. And I stopped because not only could I not go out because of the smoke and the fire and stuff like that, but because the skies were a fucking nightmare, you know, absolutely. And so at that point, it was like, we have to get out of this. You know, we want some fresh air. I don't want to be depressed all the time. And it's like most people can't get out. Like we, you know, we got lucky. We want to live simply and, you know, cheaply and stuff like that. So that's good. But most people can't. And it's, you know, so that, then what's the advice? What do you tell them to do? Well, be as healthy as you can. Eat as healthy as you can, I guess, you know, and try to get exercise and try to focus on your spiritual life and try to help wake people up. Is the, I mean, I don't know what, you know, what else can you say, right?
Yeah, and that's, again, that just it ties into the main teaching of pretty much all the ancient civilizations and ancient scriptures, which is there's no savior coming to save you. Like, you are the savior. You've got to do this. No one's going to do it for you. And I think that's important. And it's, for some, that could feel disempowering, but it should really be empowering. It should really give you the motivation to be like, well, you're the only one that's going to be able to save yourself. And there's steps that you need to do. Like you said, just you might not be able to do it all, but health is key. Build your temple. Have a solid foundation for which you build that temple on. And then once you've built the temple that's fit for God to be able to reside in and commune in, then, yeah, open your heart, and that your heart is your altar in which you are able to communicate with this higher source, with your God self. And yeah, as long as you keep that temple in good nick, in good shape, keep it clean. And I think that's a good place to start with all of this. And then once your body is clean, once you're sort of living, or again, finding your purpose, following your bliss, once you begin to do this, then your body begins to connect on a much deeper level than it would have done before. Normally, most people walk through life feeling very disconnected, very disassociated to everything. But once your body is operating the way it is, the viruses are out, the parasitic invaders are out, and you can reclaim your mind, reclaim your heart, reclaim your connection to the higher planes, then yeah, definitely an important message for all. And one of the things I want to talk about, Marty, which it's probably going to be, I'm just looking at the time, so we've got half an hour to go in on this. What was that?
What time we got?
Yeah, we got about half an hour before you go, so just say we've got like 20 more minutes.
Cool, okay.
I wanted to go over, are you up to date with, I'm guessing you don't, because you said that you don't follow too much of what's going on nowadays. Are you up to date with QAnon?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
Well, okay.
You can shit on it, or you can say what you agree with and what you don't agree. I'm just interested to know what your thoughts are.
There's just so many angles with that, because it brings in so many different topics, really. I think it's reality TV for the internet. That's what I think it is. I think the people that are in control are basically putting this out. I think they understood where human consciousness was going, and that they needed to keep them enticed and keep perpetuating the conspiracy myth. There's this notion that the carrot is put out before you, and it's like you're constantly chasing the carrot. It's like, I almost got it, I almost got it. It's like, oh, here we got these connections are being made, these people are being busted, blah, blah, blah. But it's always this idea that it's, oh, we're almost going to get there, and then it never comes to fruition. So that, like, I'm no prophet. Like, I hope I'm dead wrong. I hope I'm dead wrong about Q, but I see that that's where that's going. And that, like, really makes a lot of Q fans angry and that sort of stuff. But I just see that's what it is. I think it's basically just playing with people's emotions and understanding that they're using this almost like the goodwill of humanity and using it against them, because people want that. They want justice. They want all of those things that Q is searching for. And like they want that belief that there's a deep state that they're going to destroy, and that there's somebody working behind the scenes to get that. And I don't think that's happening at all. I think that this is the true deep state messing with people's emotions and
interesting. So do you not think there's been any advancements at all in terms of clearing out deep state? Have you been up to date on with like all of the human trafficking operations getting shut down and things like that? Like, what's, do you think that, like, What's your thoughts?
Okay, so this is the one that people keep bringing up about, like, well, it's like, well, these people are getting busted here and these people are getting busted here. But you got to remember, like, when Trump was getting in office, people were like, we were handing them, especially with, like, the Pizzagate investigations and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right? And all the investigations into, you know, Trump's connections to the Lolita Express and all this stuff. We were basically handing that worldwide investigation, that online worldwide investigation that's sort of started with Pizzagate. We were literally handing them the names of the people that we wanted to see arrested. We're like, we want Podesta. We want Hillary. We want all the cronies behind Hillary. We want you as an FBI, the CIA, to go into the Clinton Foundation, scour their records, and bring in everybody that has been connected to these people. We want, you know, this is the sort of thing that we've been talking about, like getting the big dogs, right? Because these are the people that are supposedly behind these sort of satanic organizations, or at least working with them, that sort of thing. None of those people have been busted. Not one of those people have been brought in. Now, I always said, as soon as Hillary Clinton is arrested and brought in and actually behind bars, Trump will get my vote, or, you know, I'll be behind Q or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But I mark my words, and like I said, I hope I'm wrong, but that's not going to happen. So the child trafficking, the other thing is that those sorts of organizations, like child trafficking, that sort of thing throughout the history with Clinton and Bush and the first Bush and Obama, they've been busted all along. It's just now it's actually getting a lot of, fanfare. It's getting a lot of, it's publication and stuff like that, because it fulfills this need that, yeah, we're busting all the child traffickers and stuff like that. I don't think they are. I don't think if they really wanted to bust the people behind all of this stuff, they would be going to the Royals. They would be going to these, you know what I mean? They would be busting people at AIPAC. They would be going through AIPAC and finding out all the people that have signed pledges to support Israel and not America. That's the kind of people that they would be fighting. When Q goes after them, then Q gets my applause and my follow. But until then, I think it's smokescreen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm intrigued, because then you hear about, like, these supposed 25,000 sealed indictments that's been passed and is now going through.
What I'm saying is, once again, if those get opened and all those names are, you know, the people that they claim they are, I'm on board, and I'll be the first person to come out and say, I was wrong. I hope I get to make that video one day. I hope you and I one day cheers beers to how wrong I am, you know, but that's one of those things. Oh, we got these sealed indictments. This is the carrot. We got them. Don't worry. Just keep holding your breath. And they were saying that, hey, and you know, up till the last election, if nothing happens till the up till that last election, then Q's kind of defunct, and yet Q still is hanging on, and yet nothing has essentially happened as far as, like, getting these big dogs, you know. Mm-hmm. Podesta's still out there being Podesta, you know.
Yeah, that's true. What's your this kind of ties in nicely as well, because it's very closely related to if Q's plan was to follow through the way that it's being said, then the main sort of changes will be beginning to happen around, this year, end of this year, 2020, really. Have you heard of this whole thing about, I know that you know about the Gregorian calendar being fucked and messing with our timeline, in that the real 2012 December 21st is actually December 21st, 2020. And on December 21st, 2020, there's going to be some sort of cosmic event. Have you heard of this?
No. I mean, I've done enough study in the Mayan calendar and like, especially John Major Jenkins' work into it, and basically showing how the Mayan calendar was actually, like, synced up to things that were happening in the heavens. And that's the December 21st solstice sun rising in the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the dark rift, if you will, in the sky, is rising with that. So that correlation is a pretty strong correlation to me. And I think John Major Jenkins' work is pretty spot on, because not only do you have the mathematics behind it, but now you actually have the astronomy behind it. And not only that, as he's gone on to prove, I think he's done phenomenal work in this, but then also gone on to show that the archaeoastronomy of the Mayan civilization is actually showing the exact same thing. So I think 2012 happened on 2012. It has nothing to do with the Orion calendar, but because there is that correlation into the sky.
Interesting. And what's that guy called? Sorry.
John Major Jenkins. John Major, I did a video for those of you guys that want to watch this. I did a video called The Genius of the Mayan Calendar. And basically what I did is I broke up like the Solkin and the Hob, and I looked at the central basically timekeeping devices of the Mayan calendar. And I looked at specifically the mathematics of those and showed how not only the foundational mathematics of their, it's a base 20 system. What's the name of the base 20 system? Anyway, it's a base 20 system. They use that base 20 system on their cylindrical timekeeping pieces, being the Hob and the Solkin, and show how all of that stuff is actually related to the human hands. So basically that the Mayans were keeping long counts, like the long count calendar, which is supposedly the precession of the equinoxes, that they were basically keeping these long patterns of the cycles of the heavens above, and they were basing it on the mathematics of the human hands.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it does. It's like, at this point, it's just like, yeah, duh. Like, if you've studied this stuff, it's like, yeah, of course that makes sense, right? Because everything is based on this stuff, right? But so anyway, the guy is John Major Jenkins. And unfortunately, he's passed away. He passed away from, I think, liver cancer or something like that a few years ago. But I knew him. He actually edited my last book. And there was a point where I was actually going to go live with John. And John is, in my opinion, you know, one of a primo scholar, and was I was highly influenced by his work just because of his capacity to be, his integrity shined. Like, he was a very genuine, honest scholar that was basically fluffed. I mean, just brushed off by all academia because he was, you know, embedded in the 2012 thing. But he'd never said anything about pole shifts or, you know, apocalypse or anything like that. He was doing honest scholarly work. So for those of you that go check out that lecture, because I think it's pretty profound.
Nice. And one of the other things as well, just to sort of, I've still got loads of shit that I want to talk about with you, Marty. I'm trying to think of just how to squeeze this out of you quickly. What's obviously a lot of your work is sort of do with that sort of mathematical foundation that constructs everything, constructs reality. What's your thoughts on the simulation theory? Have you thought much into that?
Well, I mean, it is a simulation in a sense that, I mean, you know, it's a matrix, it's an illusion, it's a Maya, right? Maya, I think, means illusion, yeah. That sort of thing. But you know, in the sense that it is a lot more dreamlike, that's what this creation is, and it is. Of course there's a creator, in my opinion, it's not even an opinion. I think it's a fact, but it's real to us, you know? So whether it turns out that this is a simulation or stuff like that, it's like, it's still real to us. Pain is real to us, you know, even though it might be in some respects a simulation, that simulation comes down to a potency of consciousness, right? Like you're experiencing this simulation. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I guess it's just we live inside the mind of God. How about that? That's a pretty good analogy. You know.
Yeah.
They're all analogies, I think. I don't think that you can really ever explain the model in a sense of what's going on. You know, there's so many unknowns, and will always be unknowns. You know.
Yeah, it's another one that's such a fascinating sort of intellectual experiment when you think about it. And yeah, one of the things that I'm a big proponent of is that, yeah, kind of like you said, how we're living in like the Maya, yeah, the illusion, the matrix, is that this sort of dream state that we're in is like a spiritual virtual reality game, and it's almost like we're God and we've got the visor on and we're experiencing virtual reality, which is this life. We are player one in this life, and everyone that we meet are going to be NPCs. They're going to be the non-playable characters of this game run. And I had a guy on called Professor Donald Hoffman on the podcast recently, and he's based out in the University of California, Irvine, I believe. And he supposedly
Somebody just told me about this guy.
Yeah.
Bonnie, I think, just told me about this guy. Okay.
Check him out, man. He's very interesting. He's supposedly got these, what he says, precise mathematical equations that he's opening up for people to come and sort of investigate and to play with and to sort of really put through its works. That basically, yeah, the universe is a simulation as such. And he talks about it in terms of kind of like he relates Darwinism into it, in that everything is based off of gaining what he calls like physical assets, and it's the physical assets that allow us to continue to pass our genes on. But he talks about other, you've got your central, your sort of non-local consciousness, and that you are a conscious agent within that to experience and express yourself and learn from that viewpoint, and then everything else is just conscious agents. And he describes it a lot better than me, but when he breaks it down, he's got a very very influential and interesting theory on things. So definitely check him out. Donald Hoffman, he's called.
It's basically a mathematical equation for consciousness something, right? That's how it was explained to me, right?
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
And there's, I'm trying to think of what else he had to say. He pretty much blew my mind when we were talking. And it's the same thing with there's Professor James Gates, and he found that there was what's called like error correcting code within his supersymmetry string theory, whatever it is that he's looking into. And basically it's like when you break down the fundamentals of reality, you kind of get like what looks like binary code. And again, it's interesting again that there's another guy called Richard Lighthouse, and he's come up with something called the Lighthouse frequency or the Lighthouse equation. And he says that the universe is essentially blinking 1.1 trillion times a second. So it's running off 1.1 trillion hertz. And if you're thinking of it like that, with it blinking on and off, on and off, and on off, it's almost like binary code. It's almost like it's the sleep-wake cycle, just on a grand scale, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. And it's almost like you're looking through a visor, in that the universe is blinking. It's almost like the refresh rate, the frame rate that we're experiencing this reality through, is through fucking 1.1 trillion hertz frames per second. Pretty high-tech visor.
Yeah, taking off all the, you know, all the extravagance of that idea, when you basically get down to like sort of the nuts and bolts, I mean, that's basically where we are, and that's experiential in the sense that this whole world is a binary. It's but united, right? In the sense that, like, you know, man and woman, up and down, left and right, forward and reverse, positive and negative, on, off, you know, man and woman, sun and moon, right? This is a coincidentia positorum. I mean, that's where you are. Like, there's definitely been this sort of split spirit and matter, right? That sort of notion, right? Mm-hmm. So a binary, it's interesting because you're talking about simulation. You know, we can simulate reality in many senses on the internet by video and audio and text and stuff like that, right? We can simulate reality, even though it's not reality, it's on this thing. And that's used a binary code. That's, you know, so the binary code, now that's the same mathematics that the Egyptians employed too, was basically a binary, because they only needed essentially on and off in order to understand the complexities of, you know, the multiplicity and complexities of all creation can be boiled down to zero and one. That's exactly how the internet runs. That's exactly how you and I are speaking to one another right now, because of this. So it's pretty interesting. And all it is on off. Interesting thing about on and off in English gematria is on equals 3 and off equals 14. So on equals 3 and off equals 14. And the difference between something being on and off is a point. So it's literally 3.14 or 3.14. using English. So it's like literally every time you go, you know, we talked about the relationship that pi has with God in all of these different languages. We talked about Latin. I mean, I'm sorry. We talk about Greek. We talk about Hebrew. We can find it in English and even in the number 7. Every time you go to flip on a light on and off, basically it's like God, pi, you know. So that's like a more esoteric, mystical sort of approbation or whatever, you know, idea of it. But yeah, so it's like you've got all these complex theories and stuff like that about how it's like the universe is blinking at this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, that's cool, but you can take the same idea and actually bring it down to applicability, like literally right there. You know what I mean?
Damn, bro, yeah. See, that's the sort of stuff that I love. And it's, again, everything's so synchronistic, and I've had a lot of synchronicity in my own life recently. And it's very interesting. That's two people that I brought up. Could have been anyone I brought up. Brought up Laurel earlier on, and it turns out that she got in contact with you. And, well, granted, I did tell her to. But and then another, I bring out Donald, and yeah, you just got told about him the other day. And
can I tell you another synchronicity? It was so funny. I was like, my friend, actually the same person that taught me, I think it was the same person that told me about Donald Hoffman. She's like, hey, you got to read this book called Witness of the Stars. So I went online and I grabbed the PDF, and I didn't even see who it was by or when it was. I was just like, oh, Bonnie told me to read it. And so I trust her. She has a lot of really great information. I'm gonna start reading this. So I got 60, 70 pages in. And then my other friend said, hey man, you need to check out this author. And so he's like, hey, check out this author. And it was like Numbers and Scripture. It was this guy, E.W. Bullinger, right? And so, and then I was on this podcast and somebody was bringing up Witness of the Stars. And he's like, oh, it's E.W. Bullinger. And I was like, what, really? Like, so I had two people telling me to read the same author, completely independent. And then it was only on, you know, the going to this other podcast where the guy even told me that the very book I was reading was the same, you know, it was like one of these things like, apparently, you know, synchronicities come in, and if you just accept it, it's like, okay, well, apparently that's the world telling me I need to read this author. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just kind of interesting things like that, that you just open yourself up to them. You know, a lot of these things happen all the time. It's really just whether you're cognizant of it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I really do believe they happen all the time. I think they're constantly happening, and I feel like people are just closed off to them or just oblivious to them because, like we said earlier, they're just their attention spans off, and as harsh as it sounds, most people are walking around with a mild form of brain damage. The diets that they eat is essentially they've got brain damage, and they're walking around and they're just completely disconnected. They never, like, when's the last time that it's going to be a almost like stereotype, but it's a pretty worthwhile stereotype. When was the last time that someone connected with the earth? It's very rare. You could go for weeks if you live a quote-unquote normal life. You get up in the morning, you do your whole morning routine, whatever bullshit, you put your shoes on, you go to work, you come back, you take your shoes off in your house, and you're back into that sort of non-native electromagnetic field. When was the last time that someone connected to the earth? It's like something as simple as that. And by just by connecting to the earth, you kind of just ground yourself and just, and then sort of get some downloads in. But yeah, people are so detached, so detached, so disconnected, so oblivious to what this whole gig's about, what this whole game's about, what the Matrix is about.
In many respects, I am too in a lot of these ways, because, you know, we're starting to like, you know, start planting. We want to grow our own food and stuff like that. And, you know, it's like, I really haven't done much. I mean, I grew weed at one point in my life, but I haven't really done much of that, you know? So it's like, I'm learning. It's like, you know, I'm going to start putting my, you know, hands into the ground and stuff like that. I think I should have probably been doing this when I was 13. You know what I mean?
Like, do you sungaze at all? Have you ever practiced that?
Not really. No. You know, I mean,
you've got like the perfect environment, man. Rock that shit over in Hawaii. You could literally take shit to the next level. Like, there's a guy in Hawaii. Whereabouts in Hawaii are you based?
The Big Island.
You could check. You might want to check him out. He's called Dr. Robert Kassar, and he's got a YouTube channel called Earther Academy. He's based out in Hawaii. I don't know what bit, to be honest with you. And he is next level. And if you look at some of his protocols that he implements, or even if you go and check him out, you could take yourself to that next level, man. You're like Hawaii. I don't know what it is. There's a lot of great minds in Hawaii. There's also another gent who's like the grandfather of quantum biology, of light medicine, phototherapy, called Dr. Jacob Lieberman. He lives out your end as well. There's a lot of interest in, I don't know what it is. Hawaii just seems to attract. I don't know if it's the environment, it's the lifestyle that's attached to it, but Hawaii just seems to attract a lot of great minds. I don't know if there's something there.
Blue sky and sun. So
yeah, that's all you need, man. All you need is the earth and the sun. If you've got that, you've got the negative ionic exchange from the earth when you ground, and you've got the photons from the sun. That's the main sources of energy for our cells, and that we need to, in order to be optimized, which is photons and electrons. That's what we run off. Everything else is secondary. So again, just being out doing your shit. Like you said, you've disconnected from a lot of the stuff from mainstream, and now you're just out there living the simple life. That's all you kind of need in order to live the spiritual life and to really be in the best of health, and that's physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I've just checked out the time, Marty. We literally haven't got like much time left, so I just want to sort of tie this one up. Yep. And for everyone that's enjoyed what you've had to say today, like, I'm gonna put all this in the show notes anyway, but just so you can say it, like, whereabouts can they find more of Marty Leeds, your sort of YouTube? I know you said that you don't do too much of, I see you kind of pop up on Instagram now and then, or is there any sort of links that you want to sort of push people towards, any videos of yours that are a good introduction apart from this, or yeah, just where can they find you?
Well, I'm not on social media too much. I mean, I'm on Instagram, but I don't do Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. I basically sort of streamlined everything I do through either my website, MartyLeeds33.com, or, you know, the YouTube channel, Marty Leeds Live. And so that's the best places to find me. I have a place for members. Like, it's a whole member section of my website. You can go and sign up. It's like $5 a month. And there's a ton of the old videos and stuff like that there before I got shut down on the other channel. So there's all that there. There's podcasts. I mean, there's documentaries. There's a whole Red Pill section. So there's a whole bunch of stuff, even just for free, that you can digest if, you know, you don't give me any money. But so that's basically the best place to find me. And like I said, I basically do lectures every single week, and it's always on a new topic, and it's usually pretty heady and controversial stuff. And so I try to take my time doing it. Sometimes the lectures are 2 hours, 3 hours, but it's only once a week usually, but that's kind of what I do. So, and I've got five books, I think, something like that. I'm working on an anthology right now. That'll probably be out the next year or two or something like that. So, but yeah, that's best place you can get me.
Nice, man. And for anyone that's interested in your books, where's the best place? Is it off your website? Is it off Amazon?
It's Amazon and my website. And that's the other thing, I'm trying to get away from Amazon, because right now they print my books, and you know, they're becoming this sort of monopoly, and I want to get away
from the Amazon. Cunts, man. Fucking hate Amazon.
But right now they're allowing me to be able to, you know, I hate YouTube too, but right now they're allowing me to do what I do, and you know, so I got to sort of use those platforms. But when I do the anthology, I'm going to take it off Amazon, and I'll probably just sell it exclusively through my site. So, but right now you can get my books at amazon.com or my site. So,
okay, sorry, man. All right, so in which case we close that one off. So guys, hopefully you've enjoyed this one. Hopefully that's gave you a bit of insight into Marty's work. Again, it's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more to explore. Check out his channel. Like, he really is the real deal and a true truth seeker, in that he's doing this from the heart and for the right reasons. And I'm a massive fan of his work, and I'm sure you guys will be as well if you give him some time, give him some attention to his work, and go at it from an open mind, and there's a lot to learn. And again, like I said, tip of the iceberg, there's so much that we didn't cover, that we couldn't cover, that's just as equally important in terms of understanding the bigger picture with everything that I'm trying to tie together with this podcast. So definitely check him out. So other than that, Marty, been great having you on, man. Guys, it's been great for you listening, I hope. And as always, stay woke as fuck, and I'll catch you on the next episode.